to Sweet Peas and a Writer Podcast,
a place where beginning writers can be inspired, encouraged, and informed,
or at the very least, entertained. I'm author Teresa Sneed.
And I'm author Betsy Love.
It's time for another author reading, where Betsy and I will read five-minute excerpts from authors' works.
It's a time dedicated to promoting authors. Today, Teresa will be reading from No Angel. But check out our schedule for exciting authors at Sweet Peas and a Writer Podcast. So, Teresa, tell me a little bit about you as a writer.
Me as a writer? Well, I feel like it's a real privilege to be an author. I'm still in shock. It's something that I've wanted to do all of my life. I've always written.
Okay, so you had mentioned one time when we were talking about you being a closet writer. You know, I always pictured you in the closet with your laptop and your husband opening the door going, "Honey, what are you doing?"
Well, just take away the closet doors and it was exactly the same thing, because I would write and then pretend I wasn't. You know, like, I mean, because when you're a writer, you spend inordinate amounts of time putting together your writing. And when I first started out, I didn't have a computer. I just used a pad of paper and a pencil. And so, I mean, how insane is it when you look at your spouse and your spouse has always got a pencil in her hand and a pad of paper?
But, yeah. Well, and then he goes to work and he's working so hard. And so many times I think people don't consider writing to be hard work. Well, is it hard work?
Oh, it is. It's really strange because, you know, I've been using a computer for years now and I can sit behind my computer and spend hours. We're talking 10, 12, 14 hours, and it doesn't seem like hardly any time has passed.
I know. I've had the same thing. My husband will walk out the door, and I'm like, "You're back already?" And he'll go, "I've been gone for 8 hours."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Oh, I haven't even eaten."
There was a lady at church on Sunday, and she was talking about something in the scriptures, and, oh, it was Enos and how Enos prayed all day long, you know, and all night, too. And she said, she got really serious, and she said, "I have never done anything long, you know, from, you know, hours and hours and hours ever, the same thing." And I'm thinking to myself, I have.
Give me a piece of paper and a pencil and I'll be as happy as a clam.
That's me.
So I just want to know, if I'm going to hell, is there paper and pencil there?
Oh, well, see, it's flammable.
So tell me about your writing journey. How has that evolved for you?
My writing journey. Well, it's so fun being published because I feel validated as an author. It's just wonderful. I get people who contact me regularly for advice, and I love giving advice. I love doing that. I do not feel like I'm there myself. I'm still developing. Mm-hmm. And my heart goes out to anybody who wants to write. I remember being at a point in my life where I really never knew if I would ever make it. Anyhow, as far as how my writing journey has gone, it's been a long time in the making, and like I said, it's going to be continuing on for a long time after this. Oh gosh, what do you say about your writing journey? I am a member of this incredible writing group. The support that I have received from my fellow writers over the years has really helped me to move forward. So I would say to anybody who is an aspiring writer that one of the most important things that you need to do is find somebody that you can network with.
Right.
Somebody that will look at your writing and give you good tips on what to do.
As you were, you know, going out through this journey, I know that your husband has been a great support to you. Is there anybody else, well, besides me, of course, is there anybody else that really supports you, that encourages you along the way?
Oh, yes. There's especially the, like I've been saying, the other writers in the animal group that I belong to have been great supports to me. I have a friend, Stephanie Abney, and you know her, and we both taught fourth grade together in the same school, and she's been a great support to me over the years. I've known her for quite some time. There's really too many to actually mention. I think that writing is a pretty much a solitary thing.
It is.
It truly is. you really have to like doing what you're doing, because it's a pretty lonely thing. But then again, I have to say it's really not, in an insane kind of way, because I have lots of friends in my books.
And in your head, and that wake you up at night and demand their attention. So, no angel. I've watched your writing evolve, and you've kind of written about eternal things before, and you set that aside, and then you started writing your fantasy. But I get this feeling that no angel, or that idea of eternal perspective, just wouldn't leave you alone. So tell us how you came about with the idea of no angel.
That's a really good question. I think it's just because it's an important part of who I am. I think it's an important part of who everybody is. I think that we do so many things in our life to cover up that part of us. But I would wager that every single person has had to have at some time seriously thought about their mortality, thought about what's going to happen, and hoped that there was something more to life than what meets the eye. And at a very young age, I had some really incredibly spiritual things happen to me. I have seen angels, and I've seen spirits. I've seen good spirits and bad spirits. I like the good spirits. I don't care so much for the bad ones. But because I'm not insane, hello.
She's really not.
I'm not insane. I just think that because I've seen things and experienced things, I know that they exist.
Right.
And because I know that they exist, it's almost like a obligation to tell people that they exist. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the premise of No Angel.
It's about a man named Jonathan Stewart. His turn on Earth was miserable. He died young, and when he died, he was bitter because of something that he saw. He didn't like Earth, didn't want to go back. But it's required in my little brain here and in my book, it's required of all people who die and go to heaven to come back at least one time to be a guardian angel. Just up in heaven, he fills out the Guardians Unlimited application. It's required to do it, and so he fills it out. And on it, he writes, you know what? I didn't like Earth. Leave me alone. So for years, nobody chooses him to be their guardian angel. I mean, would you choose him?
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't choose him. Until the beautiful Celeste Knight comes along, and she chooses him out of billions of possibilities to be her guardian angel on Earth. Now he has to go back. But he thought he was being really clever, because on the application, he requested an early marked death, an EMD. So he thought, well, good. We'll go down there. She'll die. I'll come back. In and out. That's it. We're done. Well, if he had actually done his homework and read up on being a guardian angel, he would have known that all EMDs are also death resistors, and they can choose their own time of death. And Celeste has absolutely no intention to die young. She's there for the long run, and so he's stuck on Earth, a place that he just wanted to forget. And with being a guardian angel over somebody he really could care less about. At the beginning of No Angel, you will really want to smack him.
I did.
But by the end, you'll just be really, really happy with him. It's a cute story, but I say cute story because I wrote it that way on purpose, because I didn't want to delve into really, really, really dark and heavy things. It's not dark. It's not heavy. It does have demons in the book, but I call them Shadum. And I try to be as real about them as I possibly can be, because to me, and from the research I've done and because of the experiences I've had, demons are really nothing to be feared. They're nothing to mess around with, though. And they will be definitely something you would fear if you're not living the way you're supposed to be living. And if you're choosing really bad things, because then, you know, then you're surrounded by them. But if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and living the best you can, there's absolutely no reason to fear demons. Yeah. They're just like you and me without a body and really, really bad.
All right. Well, let's hear what you have selected for us today, Teresa.
Okay. This is from the beginning of No Angel. It's not very far into the book. And one of my very favorite scenes. Jonathan is just receiving the little manual about Celeste from Saunders, who is the head of HR, Heaven Resources. So Saunders reached down and touched the silver band on Jonathan's wrist to activate it, and then handed him a small white manual. Jonathan looked down at the manual with Celeste Robin Knight in Boston Gold. She'll be an infant for a while and won't do much but sleep. Read this during those times. Jonathan thumbed through it, knowing he wouldn't need it. How difficult would it be watching a baby girl, especially one marked for early death? He slipped the manual into his shirt pocket. You'll get there a few seconds before she arrives. Make sure she sees you. Jonathan raised one eyebrow. Sees me, sir? Clients didn't see the guardians. He was sure of it. Yes, Jonathan, sees you. Celeste is a rather special child. She can see me? Jonathan asked, feeling a little unsettled. Did that mean he'd actually have to communicate with her? The thought horrified him. Just during certain times, Saunders said, adjusting his tie. A cold wave of energy rushed up the sides of Jonathan's body, and he felt dizzy. He looked down to see his feet and then his legs wavering, as if they were submerged in water. During certain times, he thought. Now more than ever, he was glad to have had the good sense to request a client with an early marked death status. What else could they possibly expect of him? He shuddered as his torso and finally his head flickered and then vanished, and all at once he was whisked down a tight tunnel. Within seconds, he found himself in a small hospital room and was completely repulsed when a doctor walked straight through him. He stumbled out of the way and watched Celeste's Earth Mother writhing in agony on the narrow bed. There certainly were a lot of people crammed in that tiny room. He wondered what kind of establishment allowed that. A low-quality one, no doubt. A man wearing white khaki shorts stood by the woman and patted her on the foot. He looked up at Jonathan and smiled. You must be Cindy's baby's guardian. He reached his hand forward. My name's Marcus Randall. Jonathan did not return the handshake. Well, that explains who he is and why he doesn't look like a doctor, Jonathan thought smugly. I won't be her guardian for long, he said. Marcus gave him a strange look, but then turned back to Cindy, who moaned loudly. A beam of light broke through the ceiling, and Celeste and another man came through. She didn't see Jonathan at first, and appeared to be concentrating on what the man was saying. I'm here to assist Marcus in bringing your mother back to heaven, the man said. Cindy stopped writhing and lay still. Then her spirit stood and took Marcus by the hand, leaving her mortal body behind. She smiled, stepped forward, and embraced Celeste, stroking her hair lovingly. I'm sorry, Cindy grasped her hands, but it was not meant to be. I know. Celeste wiped a stream of tears from her face. Jonathan watched in amazement. So this is what would happen. Celeste's mother was heading back to heaven with Celeste. Well, good. He wouldn't have to stay long at all. All that fuss for nothing. He could get back to work as soon as he left this horrid place. He'd have to go through the arrivals division of H and EB anyway. He looked around the room and realized that half of the small throng he had thought were mortals were in fact guardians. Three of them were so involved in what their clients were doing that they didn't even acknowledge him or Celeste. One bent close to the doctor's ear and whispered something into it, no doubt some words of comfort or inspiration, and the doctor sprang into action. Grab that suction hose, the doctor demanded while prying apart the woman's lifeless legs. We've got to save the baby. Jonathan sucked in a quick breath. No, you don't. She's marked for early death. Marcus turned to Jonathan. What did you say? I said she's marked for an early death. You can't choose that for your client. I didn't choose it for her. Well, I did, but not for her. What are you talking about? I requested it on my application. Marcus gasped. Whoa, you're kidding, right? Jonathan scowled at the other guardians, who were either laughing or trying not to. Marcus had an incredulous look on his face. You never ask for an early marked death, Jonathan. Never. Why? He asked angrily. It's a dead giveaway, pardon the pun. A dead giveaway for what? Marcus pursed his lips and shook his head as if he were looking at a condemned man. It's a red flag in the application rating department. It tells them that you need to be a guardian far more than a client needs you. Jonathan frowned. He didn't need anything except to get back to a steady job at H&EB. It's not always about what you can do for them. Some of it is about what they can do for you. Yeah, so? Jonathan wondered if he could get back in time to finish his normal shift and start on a second. Marcus sighed. I'm a better man for seeing life through their trials, and you will be too. So that was it. Becoming a better man at the expense of being stuck on Earth with someone he didn't know and didn't care to know. He had made it back to heaven just fine without having to get personally involved with a single soul, and that was just fine with him. No thanks. Not interested. He turned to Celeste. Are you ready? She grinned. Of course. She squeezed Cindy's hand and kissed her on the cheek, then turned to the bright pink infant the doctor had just removed from her mother's body. I read all about this. Celeste's eyes brightened and a smile played at her lips. And now I get to experience it. Jonathan turned to her, suddenly aware of what she was doing. But he was too late. She slipped into the infant's tiny body and began sputtering and coughing as a nurse, under close direction from her guardian, carefully cleaned the phlegm from her small mouth. What? What just happened here? Jonathan looked around in bewilderment. Marcus leaned back against the door and folded his arms across his chest. Well, it would appear that you've just begun your first assignment.
He's one of those kind of characters that you just shake your head and go, you're so silly. You're such an idiot. What is the matter with you?
Yes, he is.
I loved Jonathan from the moment you first read him to our critique group. And I thought to myself, this story is going to be amazing. And it really was. And I love this story. And if you loved No Angel, you're going to absolutely love Earthbound. And you can get it at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com or at your local LDS bookstore.
Thank you.
This week, our writing tip is to be sure and catch ideas as they happen. This is taken from Sandra Miller's website, and we will post the link on that. Her idea is that so many times we have these great ideas and we don't write them down. How many times have you done the facepalm thing and gone, I can't believe it, I had this great idea and I can't really remember what it is? Well, here are some ideas that she has. The first thing she says is to keep a dashboard clipboard with a small notepad in your car. What a brilliant idea.
That's a great idea.
I never even thought of that. I usually am digging in my purse. The other one, this is next one, is to keep a small notepad in your purse, your briefcase, or your pocket. Keep a notebook by your bedstand. She even suggests using some kind of a recording device.
The writing challenge of the week goes right along with the tip of the week. Try keeping a notebook or a pad of paper in your purse or in the car or wherever you can get to it quickly so that when the muse strikes, you'll be ready. I keep a small notepad in my purse, and as soon as I get to my computer, I create a file for my new idea and write down all the inspiration I have in my notepad. I've been known to even hop out of bed and jot down inspiration. The interesting thing is that when I take a look at those notes at a later day, really, really, really glad I wrote them down because they're totally new to me when I see them again. And so I'm just like, oh, so glad I wrote this down. I would have totally forgot them.
All right. If you've enjoyed this week's episode or would like to suggest a topic for a future one, we would really love to hear from you.
Yes. You can visit us at sweetpeasandawriteapodcast.blogspot.com
or betsylove.com
or teresasneed.com.
I'm Betsy.
And I'm Teresa.
Thanks for joining us.